I think all the panelists should have co-host privileges, so you should be able to share whatever you want to.
Okay. And I see that we still have a lot of people coming in, but I don't want to take up too much more time.
I'm flexible. If anybody else is, I am. Whatever it takes.
So, Michelle, you're lagging a little bit on your audio.
I am?
You are. I don't know if anybody
else. I don't know why.
Is anybody else experiencing that?
I'm not experiencing it from you.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm hearing that.
Okay.
You're hearing a lag or you're hearing me okay?
Right now you sound fine, but a little earlier it was kind of broken up a bit.
Okay.
So if worse comes to worse, just because we can't manage it too much now, we can always have you turn off your video. And maybe if there's a bandwidth issue, that might help. But right now it seems like it's resolved itself. And we have about a little bit more than half of the people who had registered. So Shannon, do you think we can go ahead and get started?
Yep, I think you're good to go.
Okay. So welcome everyone. My name is Rebecca Oling. I am the Director of Digital Accessibility at SUNY Purchase. And I've been co-chairing the SUNY Accessibility Library cohort, where we've been looking at our relationship with vendors and trying to get more comfortable with testing and learning more about accessibility, especially for our students and for each other as employees, as staff. Today we have an amazing panel that I'm so grateful for, connections that I've made over the years, and we have with us Michelle Spitz, who is, let me share my screen so I can actually have my intro slide up for you. So I'll start with the vendors, Stacy Taylor and Brian Edwards. Brian's not here yet, but he will be joining us. And they're of Digital Campus Swank, one of the main streaming vendors.
Rebecca, okay.
You see that? No. Okay, sorry. So Stacy Taylor and Brian Edwards of Digital Campus Swank, they're the main streaming vendor that we use for our big box office titles here at SUNY Purchase. We also have Sarah Brennan of Alexander Street, which was recently bought out by ProQuest, and she's a senior product manager of academic video online, or what some of us call Avon. And Michelle Spitz, who is affectionately known as Woman of Her Word. She's an audio description producer, narrator, sponsor, consultant, and she's a little bit modest about saying this, but she's also a philanthropist who really supports a lot of people who are learning about audio description and learning how to do that and to support filmmakers in doing that. So it's a little tough with an audience like this, excuse me, to understand exactly where everybody is coming in terms of their level of knowledge with regard to audio description. So I am going to do a little tiny bit of an intro. So forgive me if you are used to knowing about audio description, but here at Purchase College, when I think about audio description, I think about all the different places where we could be using this technology and helping our students really digest a lot of the information that's coming at them. And here we have a theater conservatory, so you could have audio description in live theaters or events. Certainly in museum studies and exhibits, there's a lot of audio description being used. Today we're going to be talking about movie theaters, streaming, and commercials, that kind of audio description. And in case you're not familiar with audio description or haven't seen it, I'm going to change my share. Oh, Brian is here. Okay, hold on. And this is an example of audio description. Can you see the Hunger Games panel?
Yes.
Great, thank you. This is an example of audio description that we often use in training. So you can, if you are sighted, you can certainly close your eyes and imagine how helpful something like this would be in ingesting all of the information that people who are sighted have.
Signs on a tall wire fence read, District Boundary, no access beyond this point, and high voltage. Katniss steps through a gap in the wires and heads into the woods beyond. She glances around before reaching into the hollow of a fallen tree. She draws out a wooden bow. From another tree, she plucks out a sheaf of arrows and straps it over her shoulder. Katniss makes her way through thick green vegetation.
Okay, I'm going to stop there because it goes on for a little bit, and I know we are a little short on time. But that gives you an idea of what audio description really brings. And there are two kinds of audio description. When we talk about audio description, there is standard audio description, which works with the natural pauses of whatever the media is, the movie. And then there's extended, which is really independent of that. I promised a little bit of the legal landscape, and I am not a legal scholar. I am not a lawyer by any means, and I'm somewhat self-taught in this area. But my understanding of the legal landscape for where audio description sort of sits is certainly within the ADA from 1990, which is now 32 years old, believe it or not. Title II requires audio description for public entities, and Title III requires audio description for places of public accommodation, including private organizations that provide public accommodation. So when you think about like sort of governmental things, you know, trains, planes, and automobiles, right? Those kinds of things that would be certainly covered. In the 1973 Rehabilitation Act, there's Section 504 and Sections 508. Section 504 prohibits discrimination against individuals with disabilities in public or private institutions, programs, or activities that receive federal financial assistance. And those agencies have to provide auxiliary aids, so hearing aids or captioning, those kinds of things would be required. More recently, Section 508 received sort of a refresh. So during the Clinton administration in 1998, it was sort of the interwebs were added, right? And that was bolstered a little bit. And then again, in 2017, we see the addition of the WCAG standards for web information. So a lot of the standards that we use to judge whether or not our websites are compliant will also require audio description for online videos. So that is a more significant, more recent change. When you think about 2017 and you sort of back out for the pandemic, it was really only 5 years ago, right? Like there's not that much time when you think about it. It's really quite recent. For the FCC side, we see the 21st Century Communications and Video Accessibility Act, and that actually mandates that any content that airs on television has to have captions on the online versions. But in 2018, it started requiring, again, 2018, 4 years ago, started requiring top commercial networks and affiliates to provide a minimum of 50 hours of audio described content. Mostly that's focused on children's programming and prime time. So where are we today? A little bit more recent. We talked about the 2017 refresh on the Section 508, but we also have the 2016 amendment to Title III of the ADA. And a lot of this was born out of the Netflix lawsuit with the American Council for the Blind. So they have to have a specified number of captioning devices in theaters and audio description devices in theaters. And it's based on the number of digitally equipped auditoriums in the theater. So the bigger the theater, when you're thinking about your big AMC and Lowe's and whatnot, those are more likely to have audio description. There does not seem to be that I could find any requirement for theaters that are analog only. So locally here, we have like the Jacob Burns Theater that does is a lot of classic films. I'm not sure what the status of that is, but certainly if they're dealing with 16 millimeter films, that's going to be a heavier lift. So I'm assuming that's why that is not covered. And then more locally for us in SUNY, we have seen the development and implementation of laws within New York State. So in 2004, backing up, Chapter 219 of the New York State Education Law actually states, though it doesn't specifically call out audio description, it does state that we have to have the timely provision of alternate format materials in the higher ed setting, and that that's a shared responsibility of publishers and manufacturers, which is why schools like ours can attend to the publishers and say, listen, we need an accessible version of this. And it's sort of somewhat the onus is on them. They don't always provide. And then locally for us in SUNY, we have the electronic information accessibility policy that is sort of this umbrella policy that covers all of the SUNYs with regard to what our vision is and what our processes and implementation are to make sure that the materials we provide for our students and our coworkers is in fact accessible. So I'm showing a graphic here, which is really rudimentary, but it was me trying to get around where the problems lie, right? Why are we even having this discussion? Because it seems fairly straightforward that you would, if you're going to be using something in an educational setting, it should be accessible. It shouldn't be a question. That's the milieu that I live in, but that is not necessarily the reality. So this graphic is something I was playing with, which is just a Venn diagram of two intersecting circles. On the one side, you have filmmakers. On the other side, you have distributors. And in the middle is the technology and the platforms. And actually, there's probably another circle that belongs in there that we'll talk about. So I'm going to give this over to Stacy and Brian to talk about what's happening with vendors when we have this intersection between filmmakers and distributors. Where are the sticking points for you, and what are the challenges, and what are the successes?
Sure. Thanks, Rebecca. And I'll go ahead and proactively apologize that I'm in a bit of a black hole here. If you can't tell, I am in a hotel room in Texas. So I tried playing around with some lighting, and aside from just sitting on the bed next to the window, this was the best I was able to come up with. But also thank you for allowing us to join the conversation today. Accessibility is extremely important to us at Swank Digital Campus, and ensuring access to the films that we provide schools for everyone. As Rebecca mentioned, descriptive audio is one of those kind of challenging areas that I think the movie studios and the content that we provide are still kind of evolving. Certainly for their newer release films, audio description is a part of really the majority of those that are coming available. If you're not familiar with Swank Digital Campus, we partner with studios, Disney, Warner Brothers, Sony, Paramount, really all the major studios that are out there and offering streaming access to colleges and universities. But these studios, most of their new content certainly has audio description available, at least as part of the theatrical release. And then a lot of that ultimately translates down into the DVD and Blu-ray. From our perspective, as it relates to really all content that we provide, our limitations really fall around what resources are available from those content providers. So what is available from our studio partners, that's what essentially dictates when we're able to provide a resource and how we're able to provide it, with certain technical limitations in the case of audio description playing a factor as well. So with the studio type content that we have, based on the audio description project, it seems that there's roughly 1500-ish kind of DVDs and Blu-rays right now that have audio description available on those tracks. While we provide a streaming resource, those tracks are similar to the digital files that we actually acquire from the studios and then fulfill into our streaming access. And so for us, that's a gauge of kind of the baseline, essentially, of volume of films that we offer, or we would be able to offer with audio description. To clarify, we do not currently provide descriptive audio files with our content. This is an internal systematic limitation that we are currently building towards. But it's not just simply a user interface or user experience limitation from our end. One of the big challenges that we've identified in kind of heading down this road is that limited set of content, even talking these 1500 DVDs, these Blu-rays that are out there, certainly not all of those we have rights for within our catalog. So we boil that down into a bit of a subset of that amount. And then ultimately, we need those files from our friends at all of our studios, which they've been gracious to begin providing. So in the same way we do with closed captions, in the same way we do with a lot of the other language files that we get with our resources, we have begun acquiring audio description files for every new film that we acquire from our studio partners when it's available at the time of ordering. Again, just to, I wanna reemphasize the fact that through the Digital Campus platform, we do not currently provide audio description through the interface, but it is something that we are working towards. And we've identified step one is that is kind of building this library of those files in-house to have a resource that is more abundant at the point we are able to roll this item out. Again, we have some not only user interface, user experience items that we're working to overcome as far as how we display descriptive audio. Some of the challenges, and at least as our systems are built currently, relate to kind of what we're exposing. Is it clear what's being offered? As there's a, you're really kind of offering a couple of different English audio tracks that we have to build around. And then ultimately, systematically, our digital fulfillment team has to be essentially overhauled to allow for this additional audio track that wasn't previously there. And so all of those items, we are actively working through internally right now as a way of being able to provide descriptive audio in the future. We've got a couple of other roadmap items that we have to overcome before we get to that point. Some of those are getting ready to roll out here late summer. We are completely overhauling our entire kind of mediated request functionality, our entire dashboard management of our system from an administrative perspective at a school level. We are working to release, and then we'll transition out of that, and descriptive audio and the interface associated with that is certainly at the top of our list of priorities. So we're hoping for sometime in 2023 that we're able to start offering that to campuses.
Thank you so much, Brian. I know that with a couple of vendors and then Michelle, there may be a lot of questions. Does anybody have any questions right now for Brian with regard to SWANC's planning roadmap? You can also pop those in the chat and we'll make sure that they get addressed. Okay. So Sarah, you wanna pop in? Sarah Brennan is the Senior Project Manager of Academic Video Online, which is another one of our academic streaming databases. Doesn't do as much big box office, but there's a little bit in there. There's some Sony Picture Classics and some other films that we embrace.
Hi, everyone. Really glad to be here. Thanks for the invitation, Rebecca and Shannon. So like SWANC, we're an academic streaming video resource that's available to all SUNY libraries called Academic Video Online. And to echo a lot of Brian's points, we wish that all of the videos that are in our database that come from other filmmakers and publishers and producer partners came with audio description files. And the unfortunate reality is they don't. For a lot of reasons, a lot of filmmakers don't prioritize creating audio description, or they don't see the cost-benefit analysis to doing that. They operate on thin profit margins usually, especially in the independent film world, or it just doesn't occur to them that that's something they should be producing as a major asset alongside the film. And so we continue to kind of pressure and advocate and encourage them to do that. But because they don't most of the time, we create audio description ourselves for on demand. When a student tells us through the library or the Office of Disabilities that they need an accommodation, then we use outside vendors to go ahead and create audio description for that film and add it into the database. And so that's a service that we started maybe 18 months ago or so. And a lot of really great library advocates like Rebecca let us know that it was an ongoing need, and we're really good advocates for students who need that. And so we took some time and thought about how to bring that to life in a meaningful way. And we're really pleased and grateful for all the advice and input that we've been able to do that. So The bottom line is a student who is assigned to watch a video, if they need an accommodation, they let either the Office of Disabilities know or the library, and that information gets passed to us. And then we use a third party to create the audio description. We operate around a 2 to 3 week turnaround time. We try to be as fast as we can, as fast as the vendor can go. And then we're slowly building the library of titles that have audio descriptions. So we're up around 100 today and growing, and really encourage all the SUNY campus libraries here today to keep that as an option in your mind, that it is available for academic video online titles.
I have to say, I wanna thank you for all of your help and for listening, because when a school is approached with an issue like this and we want to be able to provide for our students, often we don't have the ability to do that. So, sometimes it's prohibitively expensive for us and it's complicated. Right. So when you're dealing with a title, and this is going to be a great foray into Michelle, when you're dealing with a title that's complex, that may have multiple, languages or whatever, that becomes exponentially more expensive, more difficult, and more nuanced. So one of the things that I think is so important that we have Michelle here for is to really talk about what the landscape of performance, interpretation, how is that changing? How is the education for this changing? And Michelle knows a great deal about the festival circuit. So Michelle, I am going to let you introduce yourself a little bit more ably.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. And actually, thank you, Brian and Sarah, for your efforts. It makes me very happy to hear the growth and the potential of what's going to be happening. This is what my heart's work is all my life's work in terms of accessibility. And first, I wanted to comment that I do feel very strongly that in and out of the classroom, that audio description and captioning are equal assets and equal access to everything, and that they should be considered with the same sort of emphasis that I feel and benefit they both provide. So whether or not it is being taught within the classroom setting and the future media makers, the next generation of media makers, because I do a lot of guest lecturing as well, also access to the content that's coming in, of which you are all speaking about. And the festival circuit, this is a very interesting layer that's now happening, not only in the festival circuit, but also with the TV Academy, the Film Academy, everywhere that films will be considered, watched, judged, and then ultimately chosen for a festival, and then execution in the festival level of accessibility. So for example, right now I'm currently in conversation with Tribeca, and they are now creating audio description and accessibility all the way around, access into the buildings, access within the screenings themselves. And they'll have a dedicated page on the website for access for the films themselves and the settings, which is really impressive. So this is a first, when I say comprehensive first, for Tribeca. Sundance is a festival that embraced this a while ago. South by Southwest has embraced it. And of course, any films that the content is based on disability, the original concept was, well, we, of course, naturally, those organically need to be audio described and captioned. So caption being mandated now on the circuit of platforms has to have that media asset. Audio description, and as we're talking about, it is mandated in certain settings, as we've talked about today, but it is not mandated like captions are. And that's where the disconnect is. So when you have the majority of streamers, the large streamers that are now requiring those assets, the onus is on often the filmmaker to utilize one of their vendors and also absorb the cost. For the most part, there's a small number that produce it and handle the cost on their own. So filmmakers should have the idea, whether they're existing filmmakers or upcoming filmmakers or media makers, that the ideal situation would be that the asset is created early on, and to find the means in which to build it into their budget, or perhaps find grants. I provide grants. I do this on an annual basis to produce in-kind audio description. And that's been sort of my approach for many years. I work on a lot of documentaries. I work on a lot of content about disability and otherwise. And so if that is built into the mindset to begin with and into the budget, then those films are going to go out into the ethers for film festivals, for educational platforms, for distribution and exhibition, right? But not everybody is in a position to create that. But it is a wonderful mindset to embed early on, which does create for a more universal experience in terms of many different audiences. The other aspect that comes into place is, and not everybody is aware of how this works, but some of the distribution, as far as providing the assets to them, some of the distributors, maybe the one-offs for the independent films or what have you, unique distribution, which takes place all the time, they may not understand the asset or the value of it. So it may get lost in its translation in terms of maybe to, you know, the distribution arm of what they're doing together. It could be theatrical, could be streaming, and then they may also have aligned with a transportation distributor. So if that be the case, sometimes that asset doesn't get taken to even the transportation. So someone on an airplane or on a cruise line or on a train don't have access. So part of it is learning about what it is, how do you create it, how do you build the budget around it, and how do you follow the project management of the assets with your distributor, with your sales rep, and then following it to be sure it gets to the finish line. And this is where a lot of the assets are not necessarily in perfect alignment. Everybody gets very excited about getting a distributor and they forget they need to follow some of this. So this is where some of the links in the chain are broken. And then those assets sometimes are repurposed. They are also recreated if it goes to another distributor down the road. So there's a lot of things that happen along the way, but the titles that you will find that are more typically not always audio described are the foreign titles, because maybe they were audio described or not in their language where the, you know, the language the film was based out of, whatever country that is. And then other times they will be. But if you go to a movie theater today, you'll find that the majority of movies are audio described and captioned. And the handful or one or two that are not might be a foreign title or a distributor that hasn't quite come on board yet. But that's less likely than not today. So what I want to convey is that we have come so far and we are going to go a lot further. The community, the low vision and blind community, have been pushing so hard in the last number of years, but particularly this last year, given where the world has been and access to everything. And they also are participating in narrating audio description. They are participating in being involved in the process because it is about them, of course. And so the voices are very loud and very strong. And the Hollywood, if you want to call it Hollywood Connection, Entertainment Connection, there was sort of a murky connection there now between the community and that entity, or if you want to call it that entity, it is now merging and coming together. So it almost feels politically incorrect, if I may say that, to not accommodate these needs. So it really is across the board. In the next 5 years, I do think at some point in time, audio description will be mandated, as is captioning. And then we won't have some of these issues. They will disappear and will be in a more universally accessible media platform. So that's basically my perspective and my contribution towards awareness and building it in as early as I can. And if not, then helping those that need help creating the assets. And I just congratulate everybody, including Rebecca, for bringing the awareness and talking about it more and more. But it's really quite prevalent now.
Thank you, Michelle. It's actually a perfect entree to the poster that you mentioned behind me. So I've always struggled with whether or not to describe myself at the beginning of a panel. A lot of people will go through descriptions of, you know, I'm a heavyset, graying, middle-aged woman with a green shirt and a tie, you know. But I've been listening to a lot of people on Twitter and they're like, yeah, we don't really care. Like, that's not really something that we need to know about you. However, what I would say is what's behind me, you do need to know. And that's my poster, which I love, which says, if you embrace diversity, but ignore disability, you're doing it wrong. And so I think what Michelle is talking about is this confluence of moments that we're in the overall zeitgeist, right? That we've had the Black Lives Matter, we've had the Me Too movement, we've had all of these sort of social movements. And, you know, going into COVID, it was very clear to me very early on that this was either going to be sink or swim for a lot of people in a really serious way. And I think for some people, for some of the people in the disability landscape, people who have low hearing or hard of hearing, it's been wonderful because everybody's on Zoom and you can see my lips and you can lip read, and it's been a real boon for them. But for others, they've really been left behind. And then as we see ourselves coming back to quote normal, we see the struggle of the people who were doing well suddenly like, hey, wait a minute, don't take that bolstering away from me. So we're at this very interesting sort of agitated moment, I think, in the accessibility landscape. And it's one of the things that Michelle and I have talked about quite openly, that, you know, this really needs to be a holistic approach if we're going to make forward movement. So not just our vendors, right? Our vendors need the filmmakers, need the distributors. They need the film students and the film faculty to also really pay attention to this, to increase the audiences that they're going to have and increase the potential for their film to do well, whether it's at a festival or beyond. So it's been a really, for me, a really interesting education, certainly by bits. One of the things that that we sort of did not really talk about are some of the risks that people take when they don't think about audio description from the start. So I'm just going to share this slide. If they don't design with audio description from the start, they need to shop the film around and connect with the distributor, as Michelle was talking about. Those distributors might charge fees for subtitling, closed captioning, or audio description. Those distributors might also reduce their outlay by engaging artificial intelligence to create an audio description track. And that may be artistically considered subpar, depending on what that filmmaker was trying to achieve. So again, thinking about this earlier avoids that problem long-term. And then some places might offload the audio description to a separate file or app. And we saw this recently. I want to say the Super Bowl halftime show wasn't that correct, Michelle? They had an audio description. They had it on a separate app and nobody find it.
Well, no, may I comment on that for just a moment? Yeah. I don't mean to interrupt you. Actually, what happened is the shows are audio described in live time. They're live audio described. And then they are also available on an app, sometimes a Spectrum app. So people have options depending on where they are and what their access is to cable and otherwise. So it's both. It's not one without the other.
Yeah. So do you have experience, Michelle, with the people who have had to engage distributors with the sort of AI audio description, and how has that been going?
I am, of course, I'm aware of it. I have to sort of respond in the middle here, because if it meant that audio description was not included in the media and the alternate option is not as desirable but does provide access, naturally the answer from most people would be, of course, we want to have it. In the perfect world, those of us that produce audio description and voice audio description, it does add, you know, a real world live person to it and create something else. But, you know, we have to consider where the world is going today, and it is going in a direction of AI technology and what have you, and they're housing media in the cloud, and they're able to change and edit and do what they need to do. So there's an affordability aspect to it. And then there is the accessibility asset to it. So it's going to be a playing field in the future, probably of all of the above. But that is the reality of where we are today.
I guess that would be my question for Sarah then. Is that what you are using at Alexander Street? Is it artificial intelligence? Is it a company that does the audio description by artificial intelligence? Or is it human mediated, or both?
Yeah, so we explored a bunch of different vendor options. Obviously, cost is a factor. It's not the only factor. And in the end, we decided to use human skilled labor to do it. Just the quality is so much better. And I do appreciate that a machine learning tool could help us add audio description to at scale to tens of thousands of videos for a fraction of the cost. But at this point right now, we're really focused on the quality. We want that accessibility to meet that student's accommodation really well. So we're choosing skilled labor for now. Yeah.
May I interject one more thing? As you had just commented on that, DCAPTA and DCMP, they are often providing funding to create audio description. They have individuals that are there, some also people with disabilities. It's across the map, but Imagination Video Books is also doing audio describe video books. And so we do have, and that's up to, I believe, age 12, the content, and then it's distributed through the school system. So all of those, you know, have options for the school system, and they do include live voices.
I was going to say, as I was trying to teach myself the legal landscape a little bit, one of the things that struck me was that a lot of the emphasis is on children's programming. And I think that that's wonderful. But for me, I also think it's a little bit like making a big deal out of your birthday when you're young, and then nobody cares when you're older. Like, what happens? Like, how are we going to get there fast enough for these kids who have gotten used to audio description to actually have a robust informational life later?
I think it's in the future. I think it's coming. It's an evolution, and it's baby steps, but the baby steps are turning into much bigger steps now. So I think it's a wish list, but I do think we're heading in that direction. A number of years ago, I would have said that we have a long way to go, but I think we're going there. And with more time and more advocacy and more voices speaking up and the world we're in of technology, I think you're going to find this is an organic evolution over time. It may not happen very quickly, but it eventually will convert into some of the things you're talking about.
Yeah. And I think we're at the point that we can open this up for other people to have, you know, comments or questions. But one of the things that I've often thought about is sort of the filmmaker best practices and educating young filmmakers, of course, because we're at a film conservatory. So I'm always thinking about what the branches of accessibility sort of mean for the roots of our system. And I had come up with a little bit of a slide on this where I was talking about, you know, one of the things we teach is sort of a universal design approach when we do training with faculty. And I've been encouraging them to sort of consider audio description as a part of that. And some faculty have really been attracted to that. Some faculty don't know where to start. So that is definitely, I think, maybe a gap skill set in some of our educational environments. But that in some of my reading, it was clear that audio description can also provide another potential creative path. So when you think about all of the actors out there, right, all of the people who are looking to be involved in the creative arts, this is another creative path in and of itself. There is a nuance to audio description, and there is an art to it, as you well know, Michelle. As I was saying earlier, I think it's important that young filmmakers are encouraged to consider their audiences more widely. When I'm, you know, a young filmmaker and I'm pitching to get my film into a festival, I don't know necessarily, I may know if that festival has a focus on accessibility, but I may not know if anybody on the governing board that's making the decision actually has an accessibility need. And I would imagine that if my film went into that contest with those assets or with that idea or with that in my roadmap, that could only help me. And then, you know, sort of thinking about this sort of lack of specialized publications on teaching accessibility and its integration into industry workflows, right? Especially in the context of filmmaking courses. I did not add my bibliography to the slides yet, but I will do so afterwards so you can read some of the literature that I read. And that the exploration of audio description, because it is its own art, because it is so nuanced, can really help film students boost their analytical skills when they're thinking about the overall, you know, message and artistry that they're trying to get across.
May I say one more thing about the film festival circuit, if I have just have a moment? I'm sorry it takes so much time, but it's important to comment on this. If somebody is submitting their content to a film festival, if that film festival, which a lot of them do, ask for the audio description and captioning in the consideration stages, okay, not when they've been selected, then that will automatically be an option for them to then submit it. I suggest to people, if they have not been asked that, to ask the film festival whether or not they are utilizing audio description and captioning. And if they're not, I tell them to call me because I'm going to call that film festival.
And that's, I'm going to advocate for it. Yeah, that's great advocacy.
But that's really, you need to, it goes both ways. If you're not asking, you're not thinking. If you're offering, then they're thinking. So it's a two-way street there. And that's how that messaging gets more universal.
So we have a question from someone in the audience, Tim David. What are the thoughts from the panel on offering a separate file with audio descriptions burned in? I found that sometimes people don't see the link to the second video and still think that the video is not audio described.
That's
yeah,
true.
So that's how we, oh, I'm sorry, Brian. That's how we manage it in Academic Video Online. We have two separate assets. Mm-hmm. And I think our dream on our roadmap is to consolidate those, like Brian was mentioning, so that a user has multiple audio options to select from, sort of like you'd see with foreign language subtitles. And so we're hoping to get there maybe later this year, early next year. That is definitely the ideal state. And what we have today offering, you know, the film and then the film audio described version as a separate file is sort of a placeholder, a way for us to make it available to you today while we work on sort of longer term UI enhancements.
And that's very common. I think most people are in that situation. In fact, Vimeo doesn't even have the option for audio description either. So I think posting two versions is true. Some people don't realize there is another version to see. So there's something there as far as directing them as to where to go so they can find that information. But in the perfect world, the toggling on and off, which is an organic process when they're streaming a film, is really what we want to see happen across the board, because it becomes the same platform in which to utilize and access all the assets.
Yeah, and as Sarah and Michelle kind of alluded to, I mean, the toggling is from a technical perspective, certainly more complex to develop. We've done some screenings where we do have separate files. We've been able to show film via the streaming platform in separate files. And we're kind of early stages on that. But to Sarah's point, I think we're targeting it with kind of our large scale go live as being more of an interface of toggling on and off, just to make the user experience that much more significant.
That's great.
Yeah, I was going to say, from the universal design perspective, of course, what we think about in the educational sector is, can we offer the same product easily without having to necessarily offer a sort of siloed one. And so we're constantly trying to do that. That's not always possible. It's not always possible even with PDFs that we have. So sometimes, you know, we need to have that negotiation. And some of that can rest on what are the educational objectives of using the content. And that can help guide our deliberations on how best to handle it in the end. But more than not, having it is better than not having it. Okay. I don't see any other questions in the chat, but I'd love to hear from some of our participants. We have about 30 people on the call. So I'd love to hear what's happening at your institutions, if you're willing.
Hi there. I don't want to keep the same topic. I know there's a lot of other things to discuss, but you know, so many of the social media platforms are utilized in education video. And, that was one of the reasons I asked that question, is that, you know, these major sites like YouTube still don't have a way to turn the audio to script. They've added captions, thankfully. Some of them have. A few of the platforms do auto transcription only. They don't have a way to edit those captions, which is frustrating, but again, do not offer a way to have audio descriptions turned on and off. And, it's frustrating to try and post educational or any content to social media when you have to do those workarounds. And, I'd love to find, I've reached out to a few of the large platforms like Instagram and YouTube with, very little reaction, of course. I think they need a larger group of people approaching them, but it is frustrating to try and keep content accessible, but still use social media platforms.
That's actually very true. I think that YouTube was doing a beta stage of description, from what I gather. It might be that their YouTube channel is offering audio description, but not YouTube as social media per se. But I did hear that at one point. I am not as well versed in social media and how audio description would be utilized, other than I know Facebook has audio description. And again, I think the same problem is the technology. Based on what everyone is, of course, talking about, is why is this so challenging? What is it that's making it so challenging? Why do things have to be posted separately? And why can't it be something built in that would be a universal platform in which all the different, people would have access to toggle on and off? And I don't know what that requires to make that happen, but if Vimeo, of all places, which is the platform for so much media that I'm previewing for my work before I decide to work on a project, doesn't even have that option, that tells me there's a roadblock here and an expense and a technology that has not been, should we say, finessed and made, should I say, very easily adapted. And it's, again, not quite my area, but I also am equally frustrated with that. And I can imagine on an education level and social media level, this is a problem still. But with the world we're living in, I can't imagine why this is so challenging.
Yeah, and I think, to Tim's point, your one voice as a user and an advocate, I think about this a lot. I think about the collective voices. And when I look at all of the previous movements that we've sort of been stewing in, I see how important it is for all these voices to come together. It's one of the reasons why I am not an audio description expert. I am not a legal expert, but why I wanted to have this discussion today, because I feel as if we are not all on the same page about asking, about continuing to ask, about tracking needs, about speaking up, about working with our consortia, working with our policy documents, working with our electronic information accessibility documents, asking when we look at VPATs, all of those things. If we don't get active in doing that, we are leaving people to the position that Tim is in, that it is just you. And so we can lead in this. And I think in some ways we have. I mean, I was absolutely beyond thrilled that I had a discussion with Sarah years ago, I think in 2018. And when the pandemic hit and I needed an audio described video, I was like, hey, whatever happened to that? I could really use that for this title. And within 22 hours, although I know that I should not set that expectation, but within 22 hours, I had that product. It was an amazingly powerful moment. The next time it was 17 days, just as powerful. If I can get faculty to plan ahead and I can utilize that time, it's worth the wait to have everybody included on that lesson. So I appreciate that comment, Tim. I know that John had wanted to speak.
Yeah, actually, thank you. And I apologize, I showed up late for this event and my previous meeting just took longer than expected. This topic has really set my imagination on fire. we had I don't know how many students with visual issues we've had in the past, but I was made EIT officer a year ago, and I was told that we had this challenge, and I had an instructor who wanted to use a few videos in his class, most of which didn't have AD tracks. And so I began to research it, and I've got a couple interns working for me, and I said, hey folks, how about we try to pull one of these off? And it was fun. It was a great experience for them. I have a graduate certificate in creative writing, and so I can see how it could end up being exercises for creative writing students. Mm-hmm. I just see the potential and the possibilities are endless here, and so I can't wait to get a hold of the recording of this. I really want to know more about this, and you have a very enthusiastic participant and supporter and whatever else you want to call it, but I'm looking forward to getting way more involved in this topic and the science and art as you describe it. So
one of the things, John, that makes me think of is one of the articles that I read about teaching filmmaking students audio description, that the overwhelming thing that they walked away with was a new understanding of their content and what they were trying to achieve and the possibility for it. So there, it is exciting. It is also abhorrently difficult if you don't know what you're doing. I can tell you, I just to try it out, we were working with a title called Tales of the Warrior, which has a lot of information about the Warrior who are, I don't want to say trans, because they don't keep that for that persona forever. It's generally short-lived, but often men who take on the persona of a woman and have relationships during a period of time in their lives, and trying to just describe even a scene, there was so much information that it really makes you realize how the complete dearth that there would be even watching a documentary, which is narrated, if you don't have that visual information and that nuance.
Oh, absolutely. And, we were actually working on doing an audio description for the movie Philadelphia. And, there's so much that subtlety that's happening visually, you know, the whole scene where Tom Hanks is first introduced to the Washington character there, and Denzel Washington. And, you don't see how Washington is just repulsed by this AIDS victim. And it's so important to the story because he transitions into actually, you probably know the story, and if you don't know, I'm going to spoil it. But, how do you describe that within the pauses of the dialogue? It's such a challenge, and I love it. I mean, I'm always up for a challenge.
Well, remember, there are two types of audio description: an extended audio description, right, you don't have to do within the pauses. Mm-hmm. So that offers a different amount of flexibility. And I would imagine Michelle would know more about when you decide to do extended audio description. I don't know.
Yeah. I was just going to quickly comment on it. By the way, that's wonderful, and I'm glad you're having fun with it. I think most people, when there's what we do is, and what I do is, I start with a transcript. When I have a transcript of the film to work with, I'm able to see how that creator created the content, right? And we're working within time code. And of course, there's languaging limitations as to what we can and cannot say. Not so much in Europe and other parts of the world, but in the US, there are some limitations. And one thing we're not really supposed to do is to interpret an emotion, so to speak. We're there to describe what that emotion might look like on facial features or, you know, body language, but not necessarily that. And that's where I think a lot of people get confused. And you're right. Creative writing is a great way to sort of integrate what audio description can be. But we also have to be careful that we're not over-describing and sort of overstepping where we need to be, because essentially what we do is we are a complement to the content, and therefore we're not there to distract, we're there to complement, and our voices become sort of a nuanced neutrality that is a beautiful complement to what's happening on screen. So I see so many different writers, and I work with a lot of different writers, I hire different writers, and it's interesting to watch different people's style. I like being a little more creative myself, but I also have to be very careful into what I take on. So I appreciate the joy of doing it, and certainly kind of the creative process of figuring out how it works. And to your point, real quickly, the extended audio description is more typically used in, for example, maybe commercials, marketing, trailers, education. You could stop the media, talk about it, evaluate it in terms of disabilities. And of course, with audio description, it helps those that have cognitive processing issues as well, or don't necessarily can take in that much information. So there's a lot of different reasons all of this is used. It's not just for low vision and blind audiences. So, and it's just a great anecdote if you're doing something else in the house, you want to listen to an audio movie as opposed to an audio book. So there you have it. So anyhow, I can appreciate that. I just wanted to comment on it.
So we did have one question.
Thank you for the cautionary tales there.
So we do have one question from Aurelio. How can extended AD work if separate audio is available and the video is not pausing to give time for the description?
That's a certain nuance. It has to be built in, I believe. And I haven't done extended audio description yet, but I've seen it. So I think it has to be built into the mix and the pausing of the video, from what I am assuming right now. But again, not having experienced myself with it, you'd have to probably read a little bit more about it, but I know the platforms in which it's used.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's another separate track. Sarah?
Yeah, we store it as a separate track, and then it pauses the video to let the extended AD play. And then when the extended AD section is done, it unpauses. It's happening technically in the back end of the platform.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. All right. I know we only have 2 minutes left. I think that this has been a wonderful foray into audio description for a lot of us who don't know some of the innards. And I really appreciate the vendors, Sarah.
Rebecca, Glenn has his hand.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't see that. Glenn, go ahead.
That's okay, Shannon. So I was actually just going to comment, Sarah took care of what I was going to say about the extended audio description. But for those that are looking at YouTube, and I hear the frustration with social media platforms not keeping up with the times, it's difficult. But they are working on a beta for audio description tracks. I heard it was supposed to come out last year, so development times change. But there is a project through the Smith Kettlewell Eye Institute called You Describe, and it's youdescribe.org. That uses volunteers to describe the videos. And to Michelle's point, the descriptions may not be perfect, but it's another way to get access to that content. I just wanted to make sure that that information was out there as well.
Can you go ahead and put that into the chat?
Absolutely. Sure.
That would be terrific. And I'm not sure, Smith Kettlewell, if you could just make sure that that's in there as well, that would be terrific. Does anybody have any final questions? Because I know we're at time. I believe that we will be obviously more properly captioning this entire presentation. Is that correct, Shannon? And we'll be making it available with my slides. Some of you may have seen my Google slides in the chat. So we'll clean those up and put those out as well. What's the timing on that, Shannon?
As soon as we get all the information.
Okay. Terrific. I cannot thank my partners enough for being here today. You know, Stacy and Brian at Swank and Sarah at Avon, you have been really stalwart partners for me and make me feel like I'm getting somewhere with a lot of what I'm doing. So it's really soul satisfying work that I'm doing. And I'm so grateful to have connected through Professor Leaf to meet Michelle and work with her on a couple of occasions. So hopefully this is just the beginning of more connections like that. And hopefully you'll be coming and talking to our film students and faculty. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you all.